This is Deanna Spingola. It is Saturday, December 8th, 2012, and this is one of my special interviews. We have no commercials, no censorship, no calls, and no music. It is just information and education. It is bare bones broadcasting. My guest today is Veronica Clark. Her YouTube channel is youtube.com/VeraIcona100. Veronica, welcome to the program.
Thank you. How are you?
I'm very well. And you?
Doing well.
And I know that you've been working on a couple of books and that you are, well, you lost some of your files, but hopefully you've gotten those back.
Some of them. I had so many. But you know, unfortunately, all of my Glyvitz information is gone because it was all in emails and the email systems just wipe out. So all that information that Hans Kampa and Wilfried Heinke had sent me and we had exchanged on the Glyvitz incident going through all those Naujox documents, that's all gone. So I'm still going to put out the Glyvitz book, but it's not going to be nearly as good, unfortunately.
Well, couldn't they resend what they sent? It should be in their sent file.
The problem is Wilfried's got wiped out too. He also had a virus not that long ago, and he lost everything prior to when I did. And it was only because I still had those Himmler documents, that one Himmler speech that we ultimately turned into Hitler and Himmler Uncensored, that I had it, that we even had it at all, because he lost everything.
My
so,
goodness, that's quite a coincidence.
His email went down, too.
That's quite a coincidence.
Well, his was a ways, way before mine. But, I mean, my mom's computer just got the same virus as mine. So we were actually able to clear that one out on our own. We had to go through Norton.
Okay.
So Norton had a special little process that one can do. But sometimes you can do that and sometimes you can't. It depends on what version of this you get.
Right.
Because sometimes if you try to put a CD in to install an antivirus program, or if you even try to get on the internet, it blocks you. It forces you to go to their, you have to click their bubble and go to their website to quote unquote fix your computer.
Oh.
And of course, I think when you click that and send them your credit card, it's worse. It's much worse.
Right.
So it just has to go to a professional if you get that particular version of it. There's several out there.
Wow.
Well, right.
I had a computer crash last August on a 9-month-old computer, and I lost all of my email files, and, well, mm-hmm. I lost everything, and they were never really able to get them back.
Mm-hmm.
And I keep a lot of my email, and I did have some of my folders, but several months were missing that I'd failed to back up, but now I have a backup program for the email program.
Right, right. And some anonymous person had the audacity to criticize me for not backing it up. But first of all, I've had my computer since 2005, and I've never had one virus, not one. So the first thing is one gets comfortable. I was totally comfortable and thought there's no way anything will get past Norton. I put a lot of faith in Symantec because they're really good and I've never had a problem, but this was out of the blue. And secondly, there's so much information that, you know, people like you and I are generating every day onto our computer. It's a task just to back it up.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about over 100,000 just Word files, for example. It becomes daunting, and then you have to pay for all this backup equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And have somewhere safe to store it. I mean, you know, somebody could be homeless for all we know. People need to quit judging because we don't know what anyone's situation is who is on the computer doing what they do. What if they live in their car and they don't have a means? What if they're on a laptop? We really have no idea what people are going through, what their situation is. So I advised those who are so quick to judge, stop doing that because you just don't know what that person's situation is financially or anything. They could be out of work. They could have no income, living at home.
Sure.
You know, so people should just think about what they say before they say it is all.
Sure. I mean, we all get very comfortable. I admit I don't back up every day. When that happened to you, gosh, I just went around backing up like crazy. But I hadn't backed up.
Well, I am now. I got quite a bit of it on a deep hard drive search, which is what they can do. But one can't get everything. And sometimes when it retrieves like a PDF or something off your hard drive, mm-hmm. the program that we used, it comes through gibberish.
Right.
So
right.
You can't use it. It's garbage.
Right.
And who knows what PDF that was, you know.
Sure.
So.
Wow.
And that's that. But well, I have all the important stuff.
Yes.
I do have all of the Albion and Zion United files. Thank goodness. I was very happy that I had those. All the book files were retrieved, aside from a few, which I was able to scan back in and then convert with Omnipage.
Okay. So that's
good to go.
That's good. I mean, it could have been more of a disaster than it was. And you just have to look at things positively, no matter what happens to you. Think, okay, you know, this is, I'm going to make lemonade out of this. I'm not going to let this get me down. But, and that's, I perceive that that's what you've done. You're just trudging ahead, and you're not going to let this get the better of you.
Right. And what I'm going to do instead of releasing it as one book is release it in two. So it's going to be Albion and Zion United, the Britzy Jutzy World Menace, the history. Ooh. And that's going to be what this German individual portrays, because it really is the history of the development of the English-Jewish alliance and how that alliance has become a world menace. And then the second book is going to be the same exact title, but mm-hmm. the historiography is going to be the subtitle, and it's going to deal with how this English-Jewish menace has decided how we see history. So basically, we have implicit Judeocentric and Anglocentric history. Everything we know or we think we know about history and even the present based on that history is through their lenses. So is that really true? Is this really how things are? Were the, you know, Nazis really evil? Were the Anglo-Saxons really good? Are Muslims really evil? Are they telling us the truth about anything or what percentage? It's just people need to understand that everything we think we know about the world, just every topic, is based on that alliance and their control of the information.
And they control it all, basically.
They do. They really do control the world together. And I think we're progressively getting worse and worse. I mean, I talk to everyday Joes and Janes, and everyone is on the same page. We are headed for disaster in every sense. Economic, social, political, environmental. And this is where this alliance has led us. This is where these two races have led us. So we need to ask ourselves, is this worth it? Is this the alliance? Is this the worldview? Is this the alliance that I want in charge of me?
Mm-hmm.
Kind of a thing. Each of us have to ask that as individuals.
Right. And we can certainly make personal choices that have absolutely nothing whatsoever to do with them.
Absolutely. I mean, even not buying stuff.
Sure.
That is a huge impact when it's tens of millions that make that conscious choice.
Right.
Yeah. I would highly encourage people to read that Introducing NLP. I'm on my second time reading that, and it's very much about this. And his closing chapter is about where we're headed as a species and just what we're doing to our world. It was really interesting that he took just a basic psychology principle and thought of that in the end chapter, but it's basically we need to start changing how we see things, you know, how we think about things, because your perception, whether positive or negative, whether associated or dissociated, depending on what memory or thought you have, has a huge impact on how you think about things and what you choose to do with your life. So it's really good. And one can get that used on Amazon. Just a great book. It helps you learn how you think and why you think the way you do. Like, why is it that some people dwell on past memories and can't get past that versus how others are able to blank that out or prevent it from dictating their life today and move on? Just a very good book.
All righty. And who was the author of that?
You know, I'm not sure who the author is off the bat. I have it in my truck, so I don't have it
okay.
handy.
It's
just Introducing NLP. If you type that in, it'll come up. It's like a purple cover.
Sure. I will dig that up.
And it's very applicable to history, too, how we think about history.
Okay.
It's an insight there, too. So, and speaking of which, I mean, we were going to go over how Adolf Hitler is no longer a war hero. He was anything but a war hero.
Right. And how did they spin that?
Dr. Thomas Weber is a genius, and he's the one that did it. He basically went to a few diary entries and a few hearsay pieces of information written by some members of the List regiment who didn't like Hitler or who didn't like the fact that he was a loner and he didn't go drink at the bar after hours. Whatever reason, you know, that Hitler guy, he's not only Austrian, but he's like this loser private, you know, loner guy. And he gets the lucrative regimental headquarters position and I'm out in the meat grinder. I hate him. I can write something nasty. That kind of thing. Weber went to these people and used them to counteract everything else we have, including the actual primary document, the Bavarian service record, which was put online. And anyone can look that up. Just look up Hitler's Bavarian service record online. You can save the image of it. And if you look at the handwriting, you can clearly see it wasn't tampered with. So there was no NSDAP tampering to make Hitler look brave or anything or lie about something. And in that document, it confirms what the commanding officer said, as well as his diagnoses of an injury to his thigh and then gassed at
right.
La Montagne or Montagne, however you say that in French. But I mean, it's his records detail injuries, including, quote, lightly wounded at Le Barque or Barque by an artillery grenade in the thigh. Gee, that's not in the line of fire. He was relatively safe, Weber says. He was living it up while his comrades were getting blown away is basically what he's saying. Okay, and that was in October 1916. And then, quote, gassed at La Montagne, taken to hospital, end quote, in October 1918. Now, Hitler was not awarded just two medals, but five. He got five medals. Iron Cross's first and second class were just two of those. Weber undercuts those two medals. He said, first of all, the second class, everybody got that. And number two, the first class, the only reason Hitler got it was because he smooched with the regimental headquarters guys.
Ugh.
So apparently he smooched with his Jutsi superior, Gutmann. And that's how he got it, because they just kind of liked him. I mean, this is what this man is saying. So basically, Dr. Thomas Weber is suggesting through this research, through discrediting everything Hitler did because he wasn't always on the front or always threatened like a frontline soldier, that any soldier who is equivalent to that or behind the lines or maybe in supply, etc., is a coward and isn't really a true soldier. So I guess our whole U.S. military should consider that, right? I mean, think about the implications of what he's saying simply in order to bash Hitler.
Well, that's what people do. They can't deal with the actual facts. So they have to discredit a person in other areas. And if they're discredited in one thing, then how can you trust them in something else? The name of that book is Introducing NLP, Psychological Skills for Understanding and Influencing People. And yeah. Did you say it was a green cover or purple?
It could be green. That could be an updated one, a newer release, or maybe older, but I have the purple one.
Okay, there are some purple ones, and the green one, there's 49 used copies.
Right,
so
yeah, great book, just
yeah,
wonderful.
I'll have
and
to
it definitely one. Pertains to, you know, one can apply what they read and learn from the book to history and go, hey, I see how this person is making me think from their perspective about somebody, but do I really need to do that? What if I flip it? And that's basically all revisionism does. It flips the coin and looks at the other side and goes, wait a minute, we need to come to a middle ground here that's more sensible and more objective.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing is black and white. And of course, the latest information that's come out is Adolf Hitler protected his Jutzi former commanding officer, Ernest Hess. He managed to get Hitler to allow him to transfer his pension to Italy. And he also got out of Germany. So he was assisted with emigration and he survived.
Amazing.
And then Hitler also, according to Werner Maser, protected, I think his name was Hugo Gutmann. Let me double check that. That's one of my printouts. That was another commanding officer of Hitler's. And he was also Jewish, interestingly.
Excuse me.
Yes, it's Hugo Gutmann. And he was a World War I veteran. He's the one who actually awarded Hitler. He was the one who recommended Hitler for the Iron Cross. And I believe that would be the first class. And Wikipedia is cute because what they do is they write, quote, but still continued to receive a pension possibly due to Hitler's influence. Definitely due to Hitler's influence. There's no way a full-blooded Jewish war veteran escaped Hitler's eye, especially when it was Hugo Gutmann. So, and this is basically substantiated by Brian Mark Rigg. Right. Wherein he describes how Hitler personally, with his own hand, signed tens of thousands of Jewish clemency papers and applications to give these full-blooded Jews or half-Jews, etc., the German status so that they were not persecuted in any way or discriminated against. So surely Hitler did the same thing with this Gutmann, and there were many, many World War I veterans who qualified for that clemency. And he eventually settled in St. Louis, Missouri, and died in 1962. So we see clearly he was not Holocausted.
Right.
So, and then according to Werner Maser, Gutmann received by Hitler's intervention a pension from the Third Reich down to the end of the war. So right there, Maser affirms that that Hitler did indeed make sure he got his pension. But Wikipedia wants to say possibly.
Well, of course, Wikipedia is controlled by a certain tribe.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed.
Exactly. Exactly. And then, of course, here's what we've got with this Weber thesis. Unpublished letters and diaries from List Regiment soldiers portray Hitler as a loner, an object of ridicule, and a rear area pig.
What?
So, yes. So my colleague, it's just very funny what he wrote, so I'll just read it. Let me get this straight. We're supposed to accept a few hearsay excerpts from letters and diaries of certain of Hitler's jealous List Regiment comrades over his 5 medals/awards and his actual Bavarian service record? Oh, and before I forget, there is the one other hypothesis that Hitler had his World War I medical file destroyed because he only had one testicle. But even the filthy Jutzis who started this lie backed off on this one. And that comes from Ron Rosenbaum explaining Hitler. He debunks the Hitler-Gelly-Raubel disgusting perverted sexual relationship myth, the one testicle myth, several, the syphilis myth. He deals with all of those. So a remarkably objective book coming from a Jutzi author. What's interesting is there are many, many hypotheses now about why Hitler destroyed his World War I medical file. And it gets rather amusing, and I should probably just read that too.
Sure.
But do you have any comments that you or anything you'd want to add before I go on?
No, but these things are so so shallow. I mean, they're going to attack him and say, And attack him about something that is impossible to discover, or
right.
impossible to discover now, And how does having, if he did actually have one testicle, now how does that diminish him? What, how relevant is that? It's just preposterous.
Right, is stupid. They're grappling for straws. The guy was homosexual, one testicle, insane, had syphilis.
Had dirty fingernails to boot.
Yeah, I mean, basically every negative thing one can come up with for an individual has been attributed to him. So we kind of have to back away and go, wait a minute here. Okay, here's the first part of this. And this is important because this guy, this other guy, this Lothar, is it Lothar Machtan? Yeah. Okay, he's the one that says Hitler was homosexual and killed to hide it. Murdered people to hide this. Hitler ordered the deaths of several high-ranking Nazis to prevent the secret of his homosexuality from surfacing. Okay, and what he does is he goes to his supposed military record, if you will. He refers to scores of historical documents to support his thesis. Well, so does Weber, you know, allegedly.
Sure.
To support his Hitler was a rear area pig and loser in the war kind of a thing. In 1915, the young Hitler was a dispatch rider at the front in France. Now Weber contradicts that and says, no, 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 it was in the rear, further away from the front, for regimental headquarters. It doesn't matter. A bomb can go anywhere, people. An aircraft can fly over anywhere. There were planes at the end of World War I bombing. It's not like Hitler was living it up. And sometimes behind the lines, etc., is more dangerous. So not buying that one. But he goes on.
And he was a dispatch runner. He was doing something that was incredibly brave and incredibly dangerous.
And it was important.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I think people should also consider Hitler's health. He was rejected by the Austrian military for his poor health. He was very frail and thin at that time. We must understand he was basically living in a Männerheim, like a men's home or a hostel. Not the healthiest person. Just because one can't really take care of themselves properly in that kind of a situation. So
you could apply that.
I mean, even health-wise, maybe he couldn't qualify for frontline duty.
Right.
One has to be in peak health.
And when you consider, even in this country, all of the people who are now homeless, living in their cars, living at shelters, they are not going to be as healthy. They don't have regular meals. And so, I mean, it's easy to understand that when you don't have adequate economic assurances, adequate money coming in, a regular place to live, that you're not going to be as healthy. I mean, look at all the
right.
poor people who are still stranded after the Sandy out on the East Coast.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I'm not sure if Weber addresses that in his book. Probably not. But that's an important factor.
Right. He's taken him out of context.
Right. And that may be one of the reasons, if not the main reason, he was put at regimental headquarters instead. So that's something to consider. But so this guy goes on. Years later, yet before Hitler became infamous, one of his fellow soldiers, Hans Mendt, wrote in his memoirs, quote, "At night Hitler lay with Schmidl, his male whore," end quote. So here we have this guy who later became known as Ernst Schmidt, who said that Hitler and this Schmidl guy, I'm sorry, his name, this Schmidl became Ernst Schmidt. So Mendt says that this guy and Hitler were homosexual lovers during the war. And how is he more credible or less credible than the people that Weber is quoting? You see, you could get a million different stories of Hitler depending on who you quote, depending
True.
On who you trust for the information. So was he this stupid rear area pig that didn't do anything? Was he really a homosexual and that's why he wasn't promoted and was held back? I mean, you have a million different stories here. And of course, Lothar Machtan argues that Hitler wasn't promoted because of this. So it says, Hitler's service notes read that as a result of the love affair, there was reluctance among senior officers to promote him. According to Erich Ebermeyer, a lawyer and writer who viewed Hitler's military files years later, quote, despite his bravery towards the enemy, because of his homosexual activity, he lost out on a promotion to non-commissioned officer, end quote.
But he got all of these medals, 5 medals.
He got 5 medals, and wait a minute, Weber just said he wasn't brave.
Right.
And this guy looked at his military files. Well, Hitler had those destroyed, according to Weber. So what service record medical files is this guy looking at? You see, they're all running into problems here that I'm sure Weber doesn't address any of these contradictions and conflicting theses here.
And you have to ask, who are these people that are writing these books? And then also keep in mind that at least 35,000 titles were destroyed by the Allies, including all the textbooks from 1933 through 1945. And we often hear, oh, those Nazis destroyed all of those books. I think they destroyed under 5,000 titles, which is quite different than the almost 35,000 titles plus the textbooks. And so, as you said, when you were talking about introducing NLP, we have been given a history, a false history. And certainly even before World War II, when the foundations, the tax-exempt foundations in this country decided that they were going to rewrite the history of World War I and rewrite the history of the so-called Civil War, that they were also going to produce a lot of things that would vilify anybody that was the enemy. And I believe that they did a really bang-up job, because if these so-called court historians just produce all of this garbage, then nobody's really going to look at something that's really objective and say, okay, what do they have against Hitler? Oh, yes, it's that economic miracle. Oh, it's all those happy Germans who had jobs during the Depression, when the majority of the Americans were starving and standing in soup lines. Where we didn't have flush toilets, and we had outhouses and all this other stuff. So we really need to be objective, and I think that's what you do. You're very objective. You look at both sides, and certainly if the Allies were destroying all of this property, and this is information that came from Michael Collins Piper. He actually found the numbers of the books that were destroyed, the titles that were destroyed, and they didn't actually burn them. They pulped them. The Allies pulped them because they didn't want to be accused of burning all these records.
Right.
And if you really look at that, you think, okay, what was in it? What are the Allies trying to hide? And then, of course, they're going to produce a huge amount of garbage to take the place of real, real truth and real accurate historical records.
Right. Right. And what's interesting is they're flipping it now and tearing Hitler apart from the perspective that he was Jewish. So if he is Jewish, if we run with that presumption, then what you would find is everyone would start seeing the negative things about him. And we need to just think about that. Someone's race, someone's ideology, who someone is, et cetera, all influence how we think about that person and how we see what he or she did. And it also influences how we see history. If Hitler had been a black man, would we think of him the same? I thought about that today.
Right. And if you say he was Jewish, then you could say, oh, so then obviously the Rothschilds put him in.
Exactly. There was a Holocaust.
Right. Right.
He did, in fact, protect Jews and, you know, certain Zionist Jews in those camps. Sure. I mean, how we see things affects how we write the history about someone. So, yeah, it's very interesting. So here's just a little rundown of this now. So we've gone over, well, now he's homosexual, so he didn't get promoted, blah, blah, blah. So here we have yet a third theory on Hitler's World War I service record / medical file. He lied about his service because he was gay. No, he lied about his service because he had feigned blindness in the last few weeks of the war. Because he was nuts, y'all. No, he feigned blindness to get out of fighting. He was really a coward. No, he lied about his service records because he was a rear area pig who got two iron crosses handed to him like candy. He didn't earn them at all. As for his medical file, he destroyed his file because he was gay. No, he destroyed it because he had syphilis. No. He destroyed it to hide his psychosomatic blindness. This is what these historians are saying. We have three different versions. And then they don't know who destroyed the medical file. So we don't even know if it was destroyed.
Amazing.
We really don't know. The Allies could have done it for all we know. It could be in an archive somewhere, people.
Sure.
We have no idea. They're like, Himmler may have done it. According to Weber, no, it was his henchmen. Which ones? When? And who was killed? They don't tell us. We don't know. We really don't know who was killed to hide this information. Mm-hmm. Because supposedly, two or three individuals saw his medical file and were killed as a result, or suicided.
How who? Stupid.
When? No names ever. Nothing. What we do have is the testimony from Munich police protocol from the early part of the 20th century that a 22-year-old man called Joseph, he was just called Joseph. He said, I spent the whole night with Hitler. Oh, okay. Another, Michael, who was 18, I had been unemployed for months and my mother and my brother were always hungry. So at his request, I accompanied the man to his home. That would be Hitler. And then we got another one, a boy called France. Again, he's just called France. We're not sure who he is. He asked me if I'd like to stay with him, and he told me his name was Adolf Hitler. Yeah, I'm sure he did that. Hey, my name's Adolf Hitler. You're coming with me, kid. So these three boys allegedly accused Hitler of basically going to bed with them. And this qualifies as Lothar Machten's evidence. Now, if we go to Fritz Tobias, who wrote about the Reichstag fire, mm-hmm. he just creams the NS prosecution over their star witnesses because every single one of them was lying. And it was the same thing. In that case, the NSDAP drudged up people like, you know, the boy called Joseph and the boy called Franz to testify against the communists, and it didn't go over. Of course, right. Everyone saw it. So when the NSDAP does it, we see it for what it is. Okay, you got lying prosecuting witnesses here. When the opposition does it against the NSDAP, oh, well, they're telling the truth.
Right.
Undeniably telling the truth.
Sure. And it's because they won the war, so they get to spin it any way they want.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the police reports were, these police reports in particular, they were collected by Otto von Lossow, a German army general who took part in suppressing the Hitler putsch in 1923. So he kept these documents to use as blackmail against Hitler in case he ever needed it. Boy, he's trustworthy.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, it's cute.
And then you have the book, The Pink Swastika, which mm-hmm. goes back and picks up all of this, this garbage. And that's what it is. It's garbage.
Right.
And of course, with me, whenever I read a book, I always figure, okay, let's see, who wrote this and what's his agenda or her agenda? You mm-hmm. have to just, you really have to not just take everything that you read as gospel, because honestly, mm-hmm. people do have an agenda.
Everyone does.
Of course they do.
Everyone does. And the thing is just because someone is pro-Hitler or maybe even a fascist, it doesn't mean they can't write the truth.
Sure.
So we must not think that, oh, well, it's a fascist author. They can't tell the truth. Why not? Communist authors can tell the truth. Liberal democratic authors can tell the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Jutsists, they always tell the truth.
Oh, absolutely.
Their word is like the word of the Lord. I mean, that's how they act.
Because they're chosen.
It's insane. Okay, so going on, this next one is new evidence helps cement case against Hitler's war record. And again, this is going back to that wonderful Mr. Weber. Basically what one of his key documents is a letter typed in English to Dr. Gonda, and this guy is an American in America, speaks English, from another American in America who also speaks English named Foster Kennedy in 1943. These two claim that Hitler suffered not from real blindness from poison gas, but psychosomatic. Just a conversion disorder, you guys. He just imagined it. It wasn't real. There was no physical basis for his blindness. It just happens. He went nuts. He went insane. Hysterical amblyopia. Now, I personally, and I'm not the only one, there are many, many medical doctors who do not believe in conversion disorders. They say, no such thing. There must be some physical basis for a malady. So this is problem number one, conversion disorders. Do they even exist? Is this even possible? And number two, what do these two Americans who wrote a letter letters to each other about Hitler's supposed psychosomatic blindness have to do with anything in 1943?
Right.
Where did they come up with this? Now, they supposedly had correspondence with a German doctor, a neurologist, a leading neurologist, who saw Hitler's medical file one time and then blabbed. Why? Okay, A, did he really see it? B, is he telling the truth? And C, why did he tell a couple of Americans? And right. Did he speak English? Did they speak German? The correspondence between these Americans or one of them, we don't even know which ones corresponded with this German, doesn't exist. So the correspondence between the German who allegedly saw Hitler's medical file and saw this hysterical blindness diagnosis, that person's correspondence with the Americans doesn't exist. It's only the correspondence between the two Americans in America.
Hmm.
And yet Weber relies on that as though it's handed down from the Almighty. You know, can you imagine this? This is groundbreaking. And the quotation marks are added in by Penn.
Uh-huh.
I find the document suspect.
The other thing is, I'm certain that Adolf Hitler was not the only person that suffered from blindness after being hit with mustard gas. There must be dozens, hundreds of people who had the same kinds of symptoms, the same kinds of things happen to them as a result of the same experience.
Mm-hmm. And in fact, in Hitler at the Obersalzberg, it's a self-published book. They've got the testimony just as viable as that quoted by Dr. Thomas Weber from a List regiment soldier who served with Hitler in that regiment. He said that the reason Hitler had those baggy eyes, that's
because of the gas.
Yes. Yeah. And he also, this is verified in many memoirs. It may even be in the table talk, but I know for sure Otto Wagner mentioned it. There were a couple others. It might have been Albert Speer. They said that Hitler had to have really, really bright lights on all the time in every room. Lights, lights, lights.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be another symptom. And it was early on in his life. So he was still young and there was really no reason for his vision to suddenly change.
Sure.
And of course, as for the, we haven't quite got to the syphilis thing yet, but, you know, there's those historians that go, oh, he had syphilis, all right. We need to be careful with that one because I am sure, just seeing the footage of Hitler in that tremor that he had in his arm, etc., had Parkinson's disease. And there are many creditable or credible, however you say that, doctors who have looked at this footage and just looked at the treatments that Theo Morell and other doctors were administering to Hitler at the time, that he did indeed have Parkinson's disease.
Sure.
And of course, they didn't even have, like, I don't even think they had a name for it back then, but they certainly didn't know how to treat it. So this idea that Hitler was a quote-unquote meth addict, no. A, methamphetamine, as we know it, didn't exist back then. If you want to talk about amphetamines or some kind of uppers, yes, that existed. And it was called Pervitin. And there was also other versions of similar drugs that do, in fact, effectively treat Parkinson's, because I have a family member with it. And they give them now what's called L-DOPA. It is basically speed. And even this family member of mine hallucinates, has many of the effects that one would think could go along with syphilis or something like that, because of these drugs. Now, if you look at everything that Hitler was being, or think they're insane, you know, you go, gosh, he was incoherent at the end. He was nuts. They always say Hitler was incoherent. Must have been syphilis. No. No, he wasn't nuts or incoherent. He was very much in his right mind. He was just an old man who was on a lot of different drugs for what he had. But basically, one can see that even the drugs today push similar symptoms and have similar, side effects.
Right.
So we need to be careful what we're actually saying here. And so that's another myth. But basically, some of these historians are saying, oh, yeah, it was this syphilis that drove him nuts in the end. And of course, that is what he was trying to hide in his medical file. So that would be the next thing. And how come these doctors didn't pick up on that? So we have this correspondence from this German doctor who's talking to these Americans. I'm assuming they're also neurologists or something. Mm-hmm. Okay, so he supposedly wrote to him. Why didn't he mention that? Why didn't he mention Hitler's homosexuality? Or Hitler's his syphilitic condition, if mm-hmm. that was indeed in his medical file, didn't say a thing. Said all he had was the hysterical blindness.
Mm-hmm.
So we're seeing problems here coming up.
Right. And they had, I was reading another book about the Japanese war camps, mm-hmm. concentration camps, and or some of the people that were in the military, and the treatment that they used for sexually transmitted diseases, and it was pretty awful.
Right.
It was really awful.
Exactly. So what I'm thinking is the combination that Theo Morel was giving him included, it was like strychnine. I mean, the guy was poisoning Hitler. Let's
mm-hmm.
put it that way.
Right.
He wasn't trying to kill him. I don't believe Theo Morel was trying to kill Hitler or slowly poison him, etc. I'm not totally on board with that thesis. I just think that he was a little bit of a quack himself. He was just a little eccentric, etc.
Mm-hmm.
But I think he was very much trying to treat Hitler and maybe being a little bit experimental about it. And for whatever reason, Hitler trusted this man. He had been his doctor since 1937, and Hitler was a tad of a hypochondriac. So I can mm-hmm. see how their relationship kind of just got the way it was, and Hitler didn't trust anyone else as much.
Sure.
But what he was giving him could produce the side effects that Hitler had that look syphilitic.
Mm-hmm.
The sores that he would get on his calves, you know, the little boils, etc.
Mm-hmm.
That's not unheard of. I mean, people who lose a limb, sometimes they'll get MRSA or these like boils, these abscesses that have to be lanced and drained, etc. I mean, just because they lose a limb, it's strange, but you know, you can't go by, well, this sounds like syphilis, so it was. And that's what these historians are trying to do.
Sure. Now, people can get a carbuncle if they have some toxic waste in their body, and it mm-hmm. comes out in a carbuncle. You know, if they have a cyst or something
right.
like that, if they have surgery, they can have this happen to them. And it's quite common.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we need to be careful just assuming things about Hitler's health based on a few doctor diaries.
Right. Now, you mentioned Hitler's table talk, and there is one person that produced, who produced the best version of that? Was that Cameron?
That's the only one I know of.
Okay.
I tried to get Wilfried Hank to translate the German ones
uh-huh.
straight from the German, but it's daunting.
It's huge.
It's too much for him.
Yeah.
Way beyond my capability, because my German just isn't that good. But
I think you have enough to do.
Yeah, we need a much better version. The Cameron one has problems. It's Stevens and Cameron or something like that.
Right.
Because Richard Carrier went into that and exposed several translational problems where he goes, now, this translation's a problem because they're not capturing what Hitler really means here. Mm-hmm. And he had several historians agree with him on that. So, you know, translation is about meaning and interpretation. One cannot translate anything directly from one language to another. Sometimes it's, what does he mean? Not necessarily what point blank per se is he saying, like right. verbatim.
Right.
So he came up with numerous problems, and that was just dealing with the topic of Christianity in the table talk. And Hitler talks somewhat deridingly of women in the table talk. And I was immediately tipped off about that, because if one reads the Leni Riefenstahl memoirs, the Winifred Wagner memoirs, those are two women that were very close to Hitler and talked to him, you know, intimately on many occasions. And Hitler, in fact, used to stay the night at Winifred Wagner's, like, she had like this big, it was kind of like the, almost like the Berghof, had like several rooms, basically kind of an estate house. He would stay there sometimes for the, either to just get away in the early years, or for the Wagner stuff that she used to do for
right.
the, what do you call it? I can't even think of the name of their opera, The Ring and all that,
sure.
the Wagnerian operas. So,
right. And he was a big fan. And so that would be something that that he liked to do. And, you know, you were talking about the fact that there were some other soldiers that did not like him because he was an outside. He was an introvert. He was mm-hmm. happy with himself. He liked
right.
things that most of the younger people probably didn't like. He loved the opera. He wasn't mm-hmm. going out to the bars. He really didn't associate with them, which is okay. It's okay to be that kind of a person.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Absolutely. And I mean, but these women contradict what he says in the table talk.
Mm-hmm.
How he treated them, how he talked to their daughters, who told him basically, I ain't going to be no house mom. Okay, I'm going to go be a doctor, Führer. That was one of the Wagner daughters.
Mm-hmm.
There's things in there, and there's actions that Hitler did that contradict the table talk. So I question whether Bormann might not have had an influence on that, because Bormann was a known womanizer. Eva Braun hated him. And that was probably one of the reasons. But he also had affairs behind his wife's back. And so
Bormann
could
about
very
Bormann.
Well.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. He right. edited the table talk. He
okay.
had the final say on how those notes were put out in their final form. So we need to be careful with that. And of course, Hannah Reich was a test pilot.
Oh, right.
The first woman to fly a jet. And you know, if Hitler really believed that women were kind of these broodmares, as he says in the table talk, then why did he contradict what he says there? There's problems with it.
Sure.
And there are people that are under the impression that the Otto Wagner memoirs were produced in prison by Wagner after the fact. That's incorrect. He stenographically recorded as he sat with Hitler, and he based his diary, if you will, the publication that was put out in his name, on those stenographic notes. So he's more reliable than one would think. Is it perfect? No. I mean, it's going to be his bias. It's going to
mm-hmm.
be how he saw Hitler. But he's very positive about Hitler, and that's why he's important.
Right.
You know, he would be the next best one next to the table talk.
Okay. Also, Hitler was very, very close to his mother, and he actually, because of her death via breast cancer, he wanted to find a cure. He put people to work trying to find a cure. This is not the kind of man that would talk deridingly about women, given
mm-hmm.
his actions. You have to look at his actions, not what people say that he said.
Right. I mean, sometimes we can look at what people say he said, but we just have to be very careful, actions generally are more weight than what someone says.
Sure.
So, you know, that's important to look at what someone actually did. It's the same case with the Jews and the ethnic minorities and foreigners in his service. He may have said, you know, those Slavs are sure dumb or whatever, but hi, we're relying more and more on those Slavs, and you started recruiting Slavs for the Nightingale Battalion from Ukraine in 1938, Hitler, so what do you really believe?
Sure.
We see the problem there. And of course, all the Jewish clemency. He obviously didn't despair of all Jews.
Right.
So he was willing to make exceptions there as well. And that's something that the Juicies have had a very difficult time dealing with. Brian Rigg did the best you can do, and he basically undermined the entire story.
Oh, absolutely.
He undermined the whole myth in trying to uphold it. So, I mean, that's a great book to read, that's for sure. Okay, so this German that supposedly saw Hitler's file in the psychosomatic blindness that Thomas Weber has run with, that his name is Ottfried Fürster. So he supposedly had told his American colleagues, I guess he spoke English, but we're not told, prior to the war, that he had seen Hitler's medical file about his treatment at Pozsavalk Military Hospital in 1918. And then he said, oh yeah, he was treated for hysterical blindness. Okay, why? Why did this German say this to these two Americans? What was his motive? Where's the correspondence? Did he speak English? Did they speak German? I mean, do you see how we're not given any of the details here?
Sure.
And without the actual correspondence between that German and them, we don't know what even happened.
Right.
Could be these two Americans just lying. This document, their little letter, could have been created for Nuremberg.
Of course. I mean, so many things were created for Nuremberg that one has to assume that that maybe the majority of the records produced were creations of the Jewish, you know, they had a lot of lawyers there, and they were, mm-hmm. they were very creative, and they created the Gleiwitz documents.
Exactly. Right. So that's another problem. And then we've got this other silliness. In testimony given in 1961, he also reported to have been friends with one of the commanders of Hitler's regiment. This is some Jutsi NCO speaking mm-hmm. to Weber, and said his friend had once confided in him, his friend, mind you, not him personally, mm-hmm. that he would not promote Hitler because he, quote, could not stand him, end quote. So he magically remembered every Hitlerian detail in 1961.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and then, yes, indeed, the Jutsi remembered that his friend said that he could not stand Hitler. No reason given.
Well, maybe the reason is because that was when the Eichmann trial occurred. Mm-hmm. And so you had to have a lot of other evidence to kind of promote the idea, the theory, the claims. Oh, those people were all bad, and you had to have all the supporting. You know, the
it
books that
be.
Came out, the book by the doctor, what was it, Eyewitness. He saw all this stuff happen at Auschwitz.
Oh, yeah, Miklos Niesi,
yes.
That one.
Right, and it came out in 1961. It was actually first published in 1956, and then it came out in 1961 with Eichmann's picture on the front, just about the time that they kidnapped him and took him to Jerusalem to be tried.
So it could be. There could be some some planning there.
Sure.
Right. And then, you know, this Weber, he goes, we have all this firsthand insight into one of history's most controversial
Ooh.
Figures. Firsthand? Firsthand hearsay, rumor, and Hitler bashing. And then my colleague wrote this. I just got to read it because it's funny. You see, Dr. Weber, my Jewish NCO father's unnamed friend told him that Hitler was a jerk, a loner, and that he actually liked Jews in World War I. So, yes, your theory that Hitler went through a major anti-Semitic psychosis only after he fought the entire war, deciding to sit out just the end of it via his blindness ruse, and somehow magically became a leader only Yahweh knows how, is undoubtedly true.
Oh, absolutely.
That's basically what they're saying. It's incredible. It's just incredible. This unnamed friend of a Jewish NCO told him that Hitler wasn't liked. Wow.
And that's supposed to have merit? That's supposed to convince
people? It's supposed to have merit. Absolutely.
Sure.
Weber was ecstatic when that man came forward to talk to him. I'm like, really? Wow. I think he's just blowing a few small anecdotal pieces of information and hearsay into a massive thesis.
Sure. Isn't that something like the people that came forward, like the couple, the guy that says, oh, this girl threw an apple over the fence to me every day and it saved me. And they went on Oprah Winfrey and I think they made a movie of it. I don't know.
They were going to make a movie, but it fell through because it was fake.
And I mean, all kinds of people are going to come forth and tell stories. They may not be true, but if it's true in his mind, then it's okay. Then it's true. Right? Isn't that what he said?
Exactly. And this Jewish NCO, or another Jew, I'm not sure, it might have been a couple different Jews, but it's all in these articles. He came forward to Dr. Weber and said, oh yeah, Hitler didn't have any leadership qualities. Well, then how did he do what he did?
Yes,
come now. I mean, and it took 57 nations, the combined force of 57 nations, their resources, etc., to defeat resource-strapped, boycotted, sanctioned NS Germany.
Yes.
And of course, Burton H. Klein wrote many, many years ago, the Germans could easily have won with just a few changes in policy and production early on. He said, that's what we really need to look at. Why was the rest of the world so ineffectual against this one nation?
Right.
That's how he saw it. And that's how we should probably see it. I think that's a better way of seeing it.
Sure.
And of course, yeah, if Hitler's such an inept person with no leadership qualities,
then how could he lead?
Come on, people. So yeah, this other one was syphilis the demon that drove Hitler mad? And of course they go, Hitler may have been dying of syphilis when he committed suicide, according to a new book that could explain, no, that doesn't work. And of course, even the American author of this particular thesis could not substantiate it. And she said that. She goes, this is purely circumstantial, but I believe most likely explanation, even though we can never prove it. Well,
that is
really.
That is really something. The people mm-hmm. do, people write this way. Without any proof, and yet people will buy their books and then start circulating the rumors rumors, as he indicated in Mein Kampf, when he was talking about the Jews, he was not talking about German propaganda. He was talking about the Jews, that they're famous for their big lies.
Right.
That if a lie is repeated enough that people start believing them. And he was not talking about German propaganda. They always take that out of context and make it sound like it was the Germans that were telling all the lies.
Uh-huh. Yeah, they've done that with Goebbels, too.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And this is the article that says Heinrich Himmler, the SS chief, may have destroyed copies of his medical records. So they don't even know. He may have. Well, says
and who publishes this stuff? Who publishes their mainstream publishers? And then they always end up on the New York Times bestseller list.
Right.
Well, right.
So we've got Hitler may have destroyed Hitler's medical records from World War One to hide his syphilis. Then how come historian Thomas Weber has suggested that Hitler had his medical file destroyed by his henchmen, no names given in this case, to hide his psychosomatic blindness? Hitler allegedly lied that he was blinded, too. And then we have an American doctor, likely a Jewish one, saying that Hitler's symptoms, quote-unquote, could suggest that he had syphilis, but that this is, quote-unquote, not definitive. You're just running in a circle, kids. So then David Irving weighs in. And in this case, we can rely on Irving. He says that Morell routinely performed on Hitler both the Wassermann and Mannecke tests, which are tests for syphilis, and they came up negative in 1940. There is not the slightest hint of syphilis in Morell's diaries or in his medical notes on the man who was his patient from 1937 to 1945.
Okay.
So I guess we have to imagine that he just didn't note that detail.
Right.
Well, he could have said something after the war. And mind you, he died in Allied captivity very, very quickly. Theo Morrell. And again, one can look up Hitler imagined his blindness, and we say just like he imagined the Jewish problem.
No, so,
it's just incredible. But yeah. And that whole, that Hitler on meth thing, that really irritates me, because people need to understand that Pervitin was not methamphetamine.
Right.
Did Hitler have the symptoms of a meth addict? No, people. No. That's just people being silly. Again,
sure.
Stacking all this silliness against Hitler. There's one last piece of evidence here that we can go over, and this is on the Daily Mail, my favorite. Perhaps this is why Hitler liked to dictate. He couldn't spell. Postcard from 1916 shows mistake in Adolf's writing. They really have that as a headline.
Oh my goodness.
He misspelled one word, so oh my goodness. He was an idiot. It's just stupid. But anyway, this postcard helps undermine Weber's thesis, because one would imagine that if a person had hysterical blindness, that they were trying to get out of the war.
And he wasn't.
Get into a more comfortable situation. Or if one was, let's pretend conversion disorders are real and he really did have psychosomatic blindness and couldn't see. Well, that then suggests that he was under intense pressure somehow, that he was threatened. So that also undermines Weber. No one would have hysterical blindness if they were living cozy and all comfortable in the rear area, right?
Right.
So why would he have hysterical blindness in regimental headquarters when he's basically answering phones and maybe cycling between headquarters? No threat. It doesn't make sense. Of course, Weber doesn't address that. But it just basically says in this article, this postcard, what he wrote in it. It shows that Hitler was surprisingly keen to return to the front line after being injured in the First World War. So here we have clear primary evidence on a postcard written to Landshammer, a fellow comrade of his, who obviously he had friends in the List regiment, which Weber's like, yeah, they all hated him and thought he was a loner. You know, he's writing to him. And he says, from his hospital bed in Munich, nursing a leg wound received in the Battle of the Somme, the then 27-year-old soldier wrote of his intention to, quote, report voluntarily for the field immediately, end quote. So how did Hitler get the thigh injury, Dr. Weber, if he wasn't under threat? Please explain that to me.
Right.
Can he answer that question? Someone needs to write to this Dr. Thomas Weber. And of course, Weber admits what's clear is Hitler desperately wants to return to the front, and that's rather unusual. Yeah, that's because you're presuming that he was this coward.
Right.
You know, because most soldiers don't want to fight. They want to, you know, stay in hospital as long as possible.
Sure.
I mean, Hitler desperately wants to get back to the front, he concedes.
He didn't even have to be in the military. He chose to be in the military.
Exactly. I mean, but again, in order to bash Hitler, one must go to some strange dark alleys.
Right. Go to
basically slam everything in order to make it happen. So what Dr. Weber has done is belittle every soldier who's ever not been on the front.
Right.
What he did. And I guess with that, we can address, if you'd like to, that email.
Yes, I did get an email, and as luck would have it, or as coincidentally, it is about another Mr. Weber.
Right.
Okay, this is what the email said. I am listening to your 10-20 this year, October 20th, 2012 interview with Veronica Clark. Early into the interview, she mentions a Mark Weber article. It reminded me of your interview with Mark Weber, in which he loud as maybe there were, after all, homicidal Nazi gas chambers in some camps which were destroyed after the war, coincidentally. And he says, I've always liked Mark Weber. My experience with him has been listening to audio material on the internet. His presentations at IHR conferences, which apparently no longer take place, and more recently his weekly talks on Voice of Reason Radio, which apparently died a sudden death of unexplained cause. Mark comes across with a good radio voice and seems thoughtful and reasoned in his expressions. Well, so if he's got a good radio voice and seems really pleasant, then shouldn't we believe what he says?
Mm-hmm. Well, the only thing I have to say about that is I got into this through the IHR. Mm-hmm. The very first article I ever saw looking up, because I couldn't believe that people actually denied the Holocaust. And it was funny because my dad had actually heard of David Irving on AM radio. In fact, I think it was back in the day on Kogo. Mm-hmm. Back when he first denied it, mm-hmm. when he first affirmed the Pseudocaust, which is you're affirming that the historians invented it. Sure. That's why we call it the Pseudocaust. And then, of course, Irving went downhill because all the pressure came down. They freaked out, and back then you couldn't do that. So I just know that Michael Hoffman's essay on the Jewish Bolshevik Revolution and the Massacre of the Christians is one of the first ones I came across, and he basically denies it in that and says it didn't happen. Let's talk about this real Holocaust here. And then from there, I just found the IHR and all that. Mm-hmm. And I know that the way Weber portrays it is more apt to get someone who's still skeptical mm-hmm. looking. Whereas a real in-your-face, flat-out, more like your Fritz Berg style, mm-hmm. more than likely people are going to go, uh-uh. They're just not even going to look. So I guess it depends on what level you're at in the process. Mm-hmm. What are you, first level? Are you mid-level? Or are you advanced? Because a lot of people, even once they get through the whole thing, even beyond the advanced level of revisionism, where you start to see even beyond that, which is where I think you're more that way, mm-hmm. Where you start looking at macro, okay, you're looking at Rothschild and all that, and starting to look at the other side where they're saying, oh yeah, Hitler was Jewish and all this, and mm-hmm. let's look at the real, this is real revisionism here. That revisionism over there is tinker toy. They're not mm-hmm. even, they're not going where they need to go. Mm-hmm. So it depends on where you're at in the continuum. I think that his presentation is probably the most likely to get mainstream people uh-huh. looking at it. And that's important.
And it also, we have to evaluate, okay, was there a change in his thought? Mm-hmm. Did he at one time say there was no Holocaust, there were no death camps, and then if he changed his tune and then came out and said, oh, well, there might have been some.
Right.
And isn't this what David Irving did?
Mm-hmm. Right. It could be that somebody pressures these people. In the case of David Irving, it's undeniable. And again, depending on how one views it, you think, oh, what a sellout, or he just did what he had to do.
Mm-hmm.
There are some problems with both of them, as there are problems with everybody. Depending on one's perspective. Now, I am very much under the impression that Mr. Weber has changed quite a bit, because mm-hmm. when you read his old stuff, it's very point blank, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think there's any doubt what he's saying. He's saying there was nothing, didn't happen. When you read the early stuff.
Right.
So, yes, there has been a little bit of backtracking there for whatever reason, or just a change in how he goes about it. And maybe he thinks that's more effective. I'm not mm-hmm. him, so I can't judge. But I do know that when one is trying to reach the mainstream, one has to write it differently. I mean, we've talked about this with Black Nazis too, and in the original one, it just, you just can't come out with it. I mean, whether you're going to fail a class for it, or, you know, but be denied letters of recommendation for the rest of your life, I can probably never, ever go to a brick and mortar university, certainly in this country or Germany. I mean, I probably couldn't even get into any college in Europe, but this country too, blackballed. Absolutely. Right. No way could I get in.
But you have courage. You have the courage of your convictions. And I think that that sometimes people get caught up in their occupation and they say, oh, you know, I've got to backtrack here. Mm-hmm. And when you wrote your thesis and you presented that, you were just out for the truth. And look what happened anyway. Mm-hmm. And look, well, you didn't present all of it because you rewrote it. You rewrote
right.
it. And
right. The master's thesis could not be, of course. But, yeah, after the fact. Mm-hmm.
And then that,
That did it because
you were toast.
The individual who was supposed to recommend me told everyone at the university and it spread from there. And I'm sure it went out to many universities because all of a sudden I had all these instructors going to websites and whatnot and searching me out and deciding I was one of the newcomers
sure.
to revisionism. And once they have your name there, once they know, I mean, the people need to understand when a committee is going over for a PhD candidate, they search the internet. They look at Facebook. They put your name in there and they look at everything. They absolutely do. And many, many employers do too. And if they ever find your name on a forum or something of that kind, you're done. So just know what you're getting into before you start. I'm okay with it. I'm in a situation where I don't need to worry about that because I'm not high level, but I can never advance. I can never have like a government job or a job that would really be prominent. So I've decided that earning money and being prestigious or whatever in that respect isn't what's most important to me. And of course, I didn't go into the PhD program. I was accepted to the University of Maine at Orono for that, but I just couldn't do it. Right. I couldn't write something that was a lie. Basically, to get a PhD degree. It wasn't worth it to me. I've already proven I can get in, so I really did. That was enough for me.
Sure.
So, certainly. I was happy with that, and I'm happy with my master's degree. So,
right.
But other people might not be happy with that, or maybe they're in a different situation and they need to make more money.
Right.
You know, I don't want to necessarily call someone a sellout or whatever or cowardly just because they have to be more careful. You know, I want to be sensitive to their situation too. I don't think we should necessarily, you know, jump to conclusions either.
Right. And he has done a lot of really good work. Mm-hmm. I've read several of his articles. He's very accurate in many of the things that he writes. Very, very detailed. Very mm-hmm. intuitive. And we opened the program with you saying we cannot judge the circumstances of another individual.
Right. Exactly. So and I mean, as far as I'm concerned, like his work on Bergen-Belsen and Auschwitz.
Oh, absolutely.
That really, I mean, one need only read those couple of essays and Buchenwald, I think, also. And it's undone.
Sure.
Really is.
Absolutely.
So, you know, and Friedrich Berg goes at it from a little more direct and, you know, in your face kind of way.
He's
but
retired.
He's from a more advanced person who's he's further retired. Along and goes, oh, yeah, I'm way beyond the mamby-pamby. I want to get into the real hardcore. And, you know, that's more your Friedrich Berg and probably Robert Forreson.
Right. And these are people that are retired.
Exactly. So they're in a little bit better situation for that. More accommodating, let's put it that way.
Sure.
Don't have quite as much worry to worry about.
Right.
Right. Yeah. Working professionals really do have to worry. And that right there should tell people that we're not in a free society. We are in a tyranny here. America is a tyranny.
Yes, we self-censor.
Exactly. Right. So the fact that we can't speak openly and you can't have a political view on a blog, you can't be, quote unquote, ultra-conservative or right-wing or a Pat Buchananite even in this day and age because an employer sees it, should tell you that you're not in a free country. So, and we never have had a free country, depending on what race you were in any given period of time in this country. We've always had a police state and we've always had a tyranny. And I did do a recent program. I want to redo it though. I want a better reading voice because my braces, I mean, my teeth were really hurting the day I did it. And I just didn't like the way it turned out, but it was on Slavery by Another Name by what is his name? Blackman, Douglas Blackman. Excellent book, by the way. But we had slavery and forced labor of African Americans in this country during World War II. So Americans can no longer condemn Hitler and the NSDAP on that issue.
Well, they can't. Certainly
can't.
We have it now. It's called the prison system, the privatized prison system.
Absolutely. Why don't people see that that is a form of slavery and forced labor? Those people used to be paid 14 cents an hour. I don't know what it is right now. That's slavery.
Mm-hmm. And when the judge gets an extra bonus for sending nonviolent people to prison, just mm-hmm. because they might be really good labor, and they get 10 years for doing something nonviolent, you really have to kind of ask yourself what's going on.
Right. Mm-hmm. And it's a great book because it shows you the punishment methods. There were your Ilse Koch-style beatings and torturings going on, and those people didn't even do what they were accused of doing in NS Germany.
Right.
So lest we speak of that, there was some real incredible things going on. And of course, there was the murder and cover-up of 11 African-Americans who, the only reason these men were killed, and I mean, they were killed in the most ghastly way. They were like axed in the head,
beaten
with the blunt end of an axe and kicked in the head until they were dead. Just weighted down and drowned in a river kind of a thing. The only reason this came to the Department of Justice's attention is because the bodies started surfacing. But 11 men, they were killed because the FBI came to this ranch and suspected, they couldn't prove anything, and in fact, they walked away and backed off, but they suspected that there was forced labor going on. And these 11 men happened to be there that day. That's mm-hmm. why they had to be murdered. Just in case they might talk.
Oh my.
I mean, this was going on in wonderful, free, democratic, liberal, we're all a rainbow world America, World War II, shortly
right.
before, long, I mean, it's literally from a post-Civil War to World War II era.
Sure.
And even a little bit beyond. Friedrich Berg talked about how there were basically internment camps for African Americans in the 60s. A lot of people don't know about those, but he does.
Hmm.
He lived at the time and saw it. Different states had that. And of course, they hold you on these ridiculous grounds. So yes, America is a tyranny, and it really always has been. So basically, everything we go after NS Germany on, we've done or we're doing at the time.
Mm-hmm.
We even had the medical experimentation going on.
Right.
During World War II.
And even before that.
Yes, on the mentally ill, on Guatemalans,
mm-hmm.
On African Americans,
mm-hmm. and
Native Americans in some cases.
And the Filipinos,
right.
when we invaded the Philippines, when they invaded the Philippines, I hate to say we.
Right. And there was basically a Holocaust there, 200,000 at least.
Mm. Yes.
And we talked about how Max Boot explained that away. He's like, well, what were they supposed to do? They had to intern them. What are you going to say that about the NSDAP? And their,
amazing.
You know, what they had to do with the Jews?
Right.
Of course not. So I guess that's about all I have today.
Well, thank you so very much for being on the program today.
You're welcome.
And good luck with your books, and I anticipate that they'll be out soon, and take care.
All right, you too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye.